Monday the 5th of July, Kof Gimel Tammuz, Rabbi Rashi Simon, living in Golos, is there any point? Today's share is discussed with the Yeled David Paltiel, Halevi Ben Shoshana, you should have a refer Shalema.
Good morning, gentlemen. The fine Askanim who have founded and continue to maintain the Torah way are risk averse, and they tend to discourage me from proposing any topics which may be regarded as controversial. I may have slipped in under the radar on this occasion. We'll see how it goes. Living in exile, is there any point? One of the best known passages and comments of Rashi in the Parsha relates to the project of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, their request. Now the truth is that, as is well known, Parsha's Matos is not naturally the most fertile territory for drashos. There's not that much in it compared to many other parshas of the Torah. And if you ask someone, can you tell me a vort or a thought, something you remember about Parsha's Matos, I imagine that everyone in the very learned audience we have here today will recall what Rashi says about the proposal, which the Torah narrates in great detail, at great length anyway, of Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven. The parsha, that chapter begins, chapter Periklam and Beis, begins, U'michne Rav haya livnei Reuven v'livnei Gad atzum ma'od. The men of Reuven and Gad had abundant livestock, very great, u'michne atzum ma'od, and they looked around, they saw the land of Yazer, which had been already conquered, it was on the east bank of the Jordan. And you know what? This was great pasture land. That they had pasture, meaning they had flock, and this was a great place for them because this was pasture land. They looked around and they came to Moshe with a proposal. And they said, you know what? We realize that in terms of our pecuniary aspirations, in terms of our material program, in terms of our financial well-being, we have no motivation to go anywhere else but here because we're doing great where we are. And they asked Moshe, they approached Moshe and they said, Arz Asher Hika Hashem Lifnei Adas Yisrael Eretz Miknehu Eretz Miknehi. This is a land of pasture. V'lavadecha Mikneh. That's just what we've got. And therefore, if we have your permission, we would like to take this land as our inheritance. We don't need to go across the Yarden. We don't want to go. We're happy here. Will your brethren go into the battle to conquer the land of Canaan, and you're going to stay here? And Moshe goes on to say, this is, to me, it brings back very troubling memories. It's like a deja vu, it's an echo of what happened a generation ago with the Chet HaMeraglim, where there were those who said, we don't want to go into the land, and therefore they didn't go into the land. It was catastrophic. Are you guys going down that path again? So they said, no, not at all. On the contrary, we will be in the vanguard. We are prepared to lead the battle. Just once the battle has been won, after the land has been divvied up and everyone is settled, then we'd like to come back and we'll, we'll prepare for we will build pens for our livestock and all of that here, and then we'll go in to lead the battle, etc. Now, as is very well known, Rashi notices a nuance in the exchange, because as I said, the Torah narrates it at length, and the Torah notices that Rashi Chazal mentions that Moshe says, you'll be responsible for the demise of this whole nation. Initially, that was Moshe's response to say it's reminiscent of the Chet HaMeraglim. So therefore they approach Moshe and they say, well, let's clarify. Gidros tzon nivneli b'kneinu po. We will build pens for our flock right here. V'arim l'tapenu, and cities for our children. V'anachnu nechaleitz chushim b'fnei b'nei Yisrael. And we will go in the vanguard, as we've already indicated. So then Moshe said, oh, if that's what you mean, then that's okay. And Moshe says, b'nu lachem arim l'tabchem u'gederos l'tzonachem. That's exactly what you should do. Build cities for your children, and g'deros l'tzonachem, and pens for your livestock. And then if you do that, then it's okay. And then the people say, yeah, well, that's what we'll do. Kapenu nashenu miknenu b'chol ha'amtenu yusham ba'ari ha'gilad. Our families, our children, and all of our livestock, and all of our animals, they will stay over there in Ha'ari ha'gilad, and we'll go in the vanguard, and only after that we'll come back home. And then Moshe says, fine, and this is the famous Tanai, b'nei gad v'nei reuven, that if you do, then great, and if you don't, then we don't alone allow it, it's a Tanai kofel, all is kiyadua. And just to spell it out, Rashi says, chasim hayam lamonim. So Rashi notes that there is a subtle shift. Moshe, they say, will build pens for our livestock and cities for our children. And then we will go in the vanguard. And Moshe says, great idea. Build cities for your children and pens for your livestock, and if you do it, then it's okay. And they said, yes, we will do it. We will build cities for our families and pens for our livestock. And because of the change in the order, which Moshe, without saying to them, hey, you got it wrong, your priorities are wrong, Moshe doesn't say that. He only, in a very subtle way, reverses the order, and when they agree to Moshe's conditions, so they can concede the point. They also use the order that Moshe has taught them to prioritize their children over their livestock. Okay, and that's what Rashi says, Chasim hayu al mamonam, yose mivineihim uvenosei, and they were more concerned for their property than they were for their sons and their daughters. Shikdimu mivineihim letapam, because they mentioned their livestock first before they mentioned their children. Amalehem Moshe asu ha'ikar, ikar, take that which is primary and give it priority. Tafel, and that which is secondary, tafel should be in a subordinate position. And that, my friends, is the extent of the hint that Rashi finds. And this well-known passage occupying most of the whole perek in the Torah, and this thought of Rashi, which is well-known to everyone here, I'm sure, is the full extent of the, or at least it would appear to be the full extent of the basis for the criticism of B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. In other words, we don't find that Moshe rebukes them openly. Moshe's only concern, in terms of what the Torah tells us outright, is that they intend to abandon the people and stay where they are, and when they clarify their intention that they will participate in the conquest of the land, but only afterwards they're going to come back to where they are presently, and that's where they would like to settle on a permanent basis, so then Moshe acquiesces, and it seems to be fine. It's only Rashi who draws our attention, based on the Medrash, to this departure, this subtle failing on their part. My friend Rabbeinu Bechaya says as follows, similarly you find, and he's speaking here in a somewhat Musar vein about the perils of prioritizing material interests and financial priorities over spirituality and over one's concern for one's own family. They were very wealthy. Here we have a hint to the peril of wealth. V'hayalahem mikne rav, v'chivivus mamonan. They had a lot of livestock. V'chivivus mamonan. They were too attached to their money. V'yashvulahem chutzalaretz. And therefore they settled in chutzalaretz in Ever Hayarden. V'hifrishu atzman me'acheihen v'shul kinyanam. And they distanced themselves, they separated themselves from their brethren because of their kinyanam, because of their property. L'fichach golu tchila mikol hashvatim. And therefore, when the axe fell a few hundred years later, it fell on them first. Golu tchila mikol hashvatim. They were exiled before any of the other shvatim. Shenema v'yigalem l'ruveni v'lagadi v'lachatzi shevet menashe. And this is a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, and it says there, that v'yimalu be'elokei avoseihem, they betrayed the God of their fathers, they went astray after the gods of the people of the land whom Hashem had destroyed before them, and therefore that refers to Klal Yisrael generally. And the pasuk says v'yar elokei Yisrael esruach Pul melech Ashur, so therefore Hashem stirred up the spirit of Pul the king of Assyria and the spirit of Tiglath Pileser king of Assyria, and they led away b'nei Reuven, b'nei Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, and he took them to a foreign land. And ad hayom hazeh, and so it is until this day, says the prophet, the author of Divrei Hayamim, which is assumed to be Ezra HaSofer, in describing the fate of the Eser Shvatim, the 10 tribes, of whom B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven and Chatzi Shev Menashe were the first to fall. So this is sort of the other half. Rashi doesn't spell that out, but this is the other half of the Midrashic tradition, that because their priorities were askew, so therefore they thought we're going to be safer here, we'll be more secure here, we'll be more wealthy here, we'll be more contented here, and maybe they were for a time, but ultimately when the axe fell, it fell on them first. Ad Kan is the interpretation according to the Midrash, which is quoted by Rashi and other Mefarshim, and I think I haven't yet told you anything which is all that novel, not to say controversial, zichronisht. But now I want to tell you something which I saw also in Rabbeinu Bechaya, which I find fascinating. In general, we can call this year in praise of Rabbeinu Bechaya, because I think he is greatly underestimated. He's in the shadow of the Ramban. He lived a couple of generations after Ramban. Rabbeinu Bechaya ben Asher, not the same Rabbeinu Bechaya who wrote Chovos HaLevavos, that's a different Rabbeinu Bechaya. Rabbeinu Bechaya ben Asher was from Saragossa. He was a Talmud of the Rashba, and the Rashba was a Talmud of the Ramban. And Rabbeinu Bechaya follows in the derech of the Ramban, and therefore, to be honest, Ramban is the Mechadish. Rabbeinu Bechaya explains Ramban a little bit and doesn't have quite the same sort of talent for innovation and for chidush. But Rabbeinu Bechaya is underestimated because there's a wealth of fascinating material, and it doesn't need my approbation, but I personally have found it to be a fantastic trove of insightful and innovative approaches to the Chumash, often al derech haKabbalah, etc. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that he's talking about the names of the towns that the Torah enumerates, because initially the Torah says that B'nai Gad B'nai Reuben had a lot of livestock, and they looked around and they saw V'hinei Hamakom Mekom Mikneh V'yavu B'nai Gad B'nai Reuben V'yomer El Moshe V'el Elazar HaKohen L'Nesiah Ha'ida Lemar. This is what they said. And this part, except for the Balei Kriya among us, we may have overlooked. Because they said, not immediately, we'd like to stay here, there's good pasture there. They said as follows, Ataros v'divon v'yazev v'nimra v'cheshbon v'elalei u'suva u'nuvon u'va'on. They first enumerate 9 cities. And then they say, Ha'aretz yesher hashikah Hashem lifnei adas Yisrael, Eretz mikneh v'lavadecha mikneh. So Rabbeinu Bechaya says, why does the Torah tell us the names of those towns which had been built by the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and the towns have been given names by the Ovdei Avodah Zarah? Later on it says, Musafos Shem, they changed the names. And there he sees an important hint. So he says, Hei lecha ki shemos eilu morim al inyanim gidolim ikariim, nirim mikriim betchilas ha'ir. These towns, the names of the towns, hint to great things. They appear to be happenstance. They appear to be just mikriim betchilas ha'ir. But when you look at it more closely, you will see there is a great and profound meaning. And he proceeds to interpret al pi Kabbalah the meaning of each of those towns, the names of the towns. And he says this hints to the potential that is latent in those towns, the spiritual potential that can be elicited, that can somehow be cultivated within those provinces which they wanted to settle. And he says as follows. He says, afilu, and he goes on to say something parenthetically, which I think comes from the Ramban. He says, Ki afilu posuk hamora al shemos ha'arim, even a posuk that just mentions the name of cities. The Einbel Tzarech Gadol appears to be not that important. Kol kach, v'fi ha'ole b'tchilas ha'machshava, timtza bo inyan gadol v'ikar shahakol talui bo. You will find the most profound and consequential secrets that are latent within those names. V'fi shekol ha'torah kula kesher echad uvinyan echad. This lashon is so beautiful. He says the entire Torah is one link. It is one series of interrelated. It's like a kesher echad. It's like a knot which is tied together in a deliberate and precise way. Vein hefresh ben parshas alufei Esav. There's no difference between the passage that we find in the Torah in Bereishis about the alufei Esav, the descendants of Esav, uvein atros v'divon, or what we have our posuk names of towns that were founded by Ovdei Avodah Zarah, uvein aseres hadibros, and between that and the aseres hadibros, the Ten Commandments, ki akol mi'ikar echad umimotza. They all come from the same source. They're all holy. They all have a profundity which derives from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Umeimav min hamikdash him ayotzim. These are waters that flow from a holy source. V'kula niknu miroa echad. They're all given from the same shepherd. And this HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And here he says, as I said, the idea that every pasuk, even though superficially it appears to be not that significant or important, it has profound meaning. And he interprets it, but I'm not going to go into his Kabbalistic interpretation. I want to tell you what he says in a different, a radically different interpretation of the motivation of Bnei Gad Ubnei Reuven. But I got a kasha. If Moshe Rabbeinu was so troubled by their perverse priorities, if he was so troubled by the fact that they wanted to separate themselves from Klal Yisrael because of money, then why did he allow it? After all, the adjustment that Moshe insisted upon in a very subtle way, which is not even spelled out in the Pasuk, but it's only Derech Remez, that adjustment, which they accepted, doesn't change the fundamental principle, the fundamental motivation, that they wanted to stay permanently Be'eva HaYardim because they were better off financially there. It's true, they agreed, yes, quite right, we made a mistake, a slip of the tongue, we'll build cities for our children first. But at the end of the day, they are going to separate themselves from Klal Yisrael, they are going to stay in Eretz Yisrael. The reason for staying in Eretz Yisrael is because there's more money there. They're distancing themselves from Klal Yisrael, okay, they'll participate in the conquest. Then after it's all done, they said, okay, I've done my job, I'm out of here. And they're going back to where the money is. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu agree to it? And therefore, Rabbeinu Bachaya has a different suggestion as well. He says as follows, V'lechem v'negadu v'nei re'uven kashe yadu zeth heisevu shemus ha'arim l'shemus acherim. They understood the potential latent in those towns with those names, and therefore they changed the names to symbolize that they were transforming, they were liberating the Nitzotzos HaKadusha from those places. They wanted to settle there, Me'ever HaYarden, they wanted to serve Hashem there. The Ovdei Avodah Zarah, the idolaters, the pagans, used those lands and those places which were so rich and so verdant and so productive, they used it in a perverse way, in a corrupt way. They used it in the service of idolatry. Said Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven, we would like to use it in the service of Hashem. We would like to uplift it. We would like to redeem it. We would like to transform it. We would like to utilize the potential for service of the divine that is latent in this land and redirect it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why they wanted to stay. V'zehu she'amar imatzanu chein be'enecha. If we have found favor in your eyes, yutanes aretz hazos la'avadecha la'chuza. We would like to have this land la'avadecha to your servants. And the remez is, we want to serve Hashem here. The whole reason we're coming to Eretz Yisrael is to serve Hashem. We can serve Hashem right here as well. And not only that, if we cross over the Yarden, if we abandon this land which we have conquered, we have liberated this land from the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, but you know, if we leave it, what's going to happen? He says, "Beferish, im navar sayarden yavo ami min haketzavos." So other nations from the borders will come. L'shema haaretz shehi eretz miknah, because they will hear, they will know, they probably already know that this is a wonderful pasture land. If we abandon it, it's not going to remain empty. It's going to be settled by other Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and it's going to go back to what it was before. V'yutzu lehi banos ba, V'yechazru la'avod sham avorazora. V'kitzutz netios k'minhag shehaya sham b'tchila u'lekach. Therefore, we would like to take this land la'achuzah, and by our settling here, this will be a reason, this will be a means by which we will serve Hashem, and the land will be the function of the land, the role of the land will be directed now to the service of Hashem. Now, according to Rabbeinu Bachai, according to this, because Rabbeinu Bachai also says, like Rashi, but then he has another pshat as well. This was my, and here, according to this, their motivation had nothing to do with their pecuniary interests, had nothing to do with the fact that they were wealthy. It had to do with the fact that they wanted to use the land to serve Hashem, and they realized that because the land was so productive, so it would not remain empty for long, it would not remain desolate, it would be occupied by other Obdei Avodah Zarah, and it would go back to its pagan ways. The people who come, and therefore they said, we want to settle here, we need to settle here in order to serve Hashem here, in order to show that it's possible to serve Hashem here. According to this, the fact that they were exiled first was not necessarily an onesh, as Rashi implies, or Rashi doesn't spell it out, but as we see, the Medrash mentions it. According to this, there's a whole different interpretation. Why were they exiled first? Where did they go? They were carried off into Babel. They were lost completely, ultimately. But why did they go first? Because maybe B'nai Gad or B'nai Reuven had the capacity to serve Hashem in a foreign land. They were the ones who had the strength of character. They were the ones who were not in need of the support of the rest of the nation. They had the ability, like they say, like Rabbeinu Bachai says here, to elevate the land, to serve Hashem. Gam pekan nuchal avodas Hashem. And this idea is, I would say, anticipate something which is mentioned in the Zohar. Not that I'm an expert in Zohar, but it's quoted in Or HaChaim HaKadosh in a few places. It's mentioned at the end of Parshas VaYigash, but you don't have to go Lavi Merchak Lachmo Mimerchak Lachmo. It's right here in Bamidbar as well in Parshas Balak Mi Yichye Misumu Kael. The oracle of Bilam, the heathen prophet, and and the Or HaChaim says as follows: Darshu b'zeshnei darshus yuyan shami divrayim in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. V'niru li hakosev al pi hakdama midivrei haZohar. And here he says something which he says in other places as well. Kisibas galuyos Yisrael, the reason for the exile of Israel, who levarer nitzotzos hakedusha asher sham nesunim beyoshev haaretz hahi. It is to liberate, to elevate, to redeem the sparks of holiness which are latent in that land, in that foreign land, wherever that may be. And he says, heimotz imehem kol nitzutzi hakedusha ham amidam. Which I don't understand because it comes from the Zohar. But the principle of it is clear enough. The basic principle is that the purpose of Golos, or a purpose of Golos, is not only Mipnei Chataeinu Galeinu Me'atzeinu, which perhaps is the primary faith, the primary reason that we are in the diaspora, but there is a positive element as well. There is something which is. A positive objective and a purpose. And this, as I say, is what Rabbeinu Bachai says about B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. So according to this, life in Golos, is there any purpose? Well, there may just be a purpose for it. There may just be. The fact that B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven settled in Eber HaYarden may have set the precedent, Masa Avos Simon Labanim, the capacity to serve Hashem in a foreign land. And it is a way to elevate that land. It is a way to redeem the sparks of holiness that are in that land. Now, here we get to the more controversial part. There was a man called Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal. He was a Hungarian Rav, a Talmud Chacham. He was an admirer and a follower of the Satmar Rebbe. And he was a man who lived during the very dark days of the Holocaust, and he was among the foremost opponents of Zionism in keeping with the general perspective and influence of the Rabbanim, especially the Satmar Rebbe and others in the Hungarian circle at that time. After the Holocaust, he had a change of heart, and he wrote a famous book called Eim HaBanim Semecha, in which he decided, in his view, that rather than Zionism being the cause of the Holocaust, he took the view, which he argues, some would say persuasively, and some might challenge that view, but he argues in Eim HaBanim Semecha that anti-Zionism was the reason for the Holocaust. It was the fact that the Jewish people and the religious Jews spurned Eretz Yisrael and spurned the proposal to return to Eretz Yisrael that, in his view, was a contributing factor to the Holocaust. It's not my view, it's not my chiddush. It's his, I'm not saying it's his chiddush, but it's the thesis of his book, Eim HaBanim Semecha. Now, it's interesting, about 10 years ago, that book, which was published in the Shema Kodesh, was translated into English in two different translations, actually. Why they couldn't get themselves together and just do one translation, I don't know, but within about a year from one another, the two different translations appeared. And the book was reviewed in Jewish Action, which is an Orthodox quarterly magazine in the USA, published by the OU people. And it was reviewed by Rabbi Beryl Wein. And it was during the dark days of the Intifada. And Rabbi Wein says that, the following, I'll just read you a short excerpt from it. He says, "We here in Israel do not hear the call of the love of the land of Israel and our unquestioned right to the Holy Land in a strong voice emanating from our diaspora brethren." And then he writes as follows, "I think that Rabbi Teichtal would be heartbroken to see that even after the Holocaust and the events in the land of Israel of the last 55 years," he was writing in 2001, "much of the same attitudes of the glorification of the exile and the negation of building the Jewish home in the land of Israel that he so decried still remain dominant in much of the Orthodox Jewish world." So, essentially, Rabbi Wein writes here, in his review of Eim HaBanim Semecha, that the same concerns that were expressed by the author at that time are still applicable today. B'lechas Kvod, the Rabbi Wein, whom I admire very much, I think he's Machriz al Hamida a bit. I think that this is Shlilat HaGolah, negation of the diaspora, suggesting that there is no future and there's no purpose of Jewish life in the diaspora, which was a view popular with Ben Gurion and other Zionist thinkers. But I think he's gone a bit too far. I think he's Mafriz al Hamida. One does not have to descend to Shlilat HaGolah, negation of the diaspora, to avoid glorification of the diaspora. I don't think we need to glorify the diaspora. I think we have to look to Eretz Yisrael. We have to aspire to living in Eretz Yisrael for someone from whom that is an appropriate choice. And we certainly need to support those who do live in Eretz Yisrael, not only financially, but in my view, politically as well, including the state of Israel. But to go to the extent of negating the Golah, to say that life, Jewish life in Chutz Lachatz, there's no purpose, there's no future, give it up, you're wasting your time, everybody's got to move to Eretz Yisrael or to Medinat Yisrael, in my opinion, also is going too far. From this passage in the Parsha, we see, at least according to the approach suggested by Rabbeinu Bechaya, that there is a purpose, there is a function. B'nei Gad v'nei Reuven were not necessarily motivated only by their material, pecuniary self-interest, but there may have been a spiritual dimension as well, and a very important spiritual dimension, because they set a precedent for the survival of the Klal Yisrael in Golos, and for the elevation of those lands in Golos in which we reside even until this very day. So thank you very much, and I hope I haven't overstepped. If I never get invited back, I think we'll know why. Thank you.